Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. Today is going to be a mishmash. Literarily, some of my go-to summations of what goes on. It seems to not go out of style, which is why they're significant. These little Zen stories or parables that explain some of modern ongoing BS. But this program is called The Commodification of Cool because of personal experiences I had recently with two, say, young women, a 17 and 21 year old, artistic types, creative types. And without going into details, that would be too personal. When certain topics were broached to widen the perspective in a sort of esoteric way or in a consciousness way, the people balked. It's like there was no interest. So it got me thinking, like, where does that come from, that people seem a certain way? And this isn't a character judgment. It's just that people can seem a certain way, like very groovy and hip and open to things and open-minded, and yet when certain topics are broached, they balk. So it's not just an age thing, and I don't think it's really anything new, but it called my attention to it to help me understand better, to see things in a evolutionary societal way. And what I came up with, which is again nothing much new, but that, and especially say the younger generations now with the technology and with the marketing and the branding and all that, they're growing up with a sense of things that are what might be leaning towards spirituality, but it's commodified. So for example, the 60s, the hippie stuff is now officially branding. So you can see young people wearing tie-dye shirts and dressing like and looking like hippies, as if it's like a uniform. But are they really hippies? Probably not. Are they living the lifestyle? Are they living the full lifestyle? Probably not. So it becomes a commodification, thus commodification of cool. Another phrase that I had learned, I sort of started to experience in the, I think it was the 70s or 80s maybe. It was like new agey, where this whole new age movement, again, there's some positive stuff to it, some interesting stuff. But it tends to be, and I think it's sort of like the stereotype is, you know, crystals and yoga and organic this and clothing and that kind of stuff. And, you know, homemade creams and balms and all that, which again, there's positive sides to it. I feel like people are reaching and grasping for something. They're grasping for the genuineness, the earthiness, the spirit, but it's missing. What it's missing is that deep connection, or a sense of path, which is something I encourage in my recent book, is people finding a path, whatever culture, whatever tradition, finding, for lack of a better word, a spiritual path, because it's really physical too. So say a holistic path through the life journey. So what came to mind was a Zen story, so brief yet sums things up. A monk told Joshu, "I have just entered the monastery. Please teach me." Joshu asked, "Have you eaten your rice porridge?" The monk replied, "I have eaten." Joshu said, "Then you had better wash your bowl." At that moment, the monk was enlightened. So for some people, that may be, they get the story right away, but I'll give my interpretation of it in case you're like, what the heck was that about? Basically, repeats in the Zen stories that people are looking for something, you know, fancy, abstract, and programmatic, and how to become a Zen enlightened monk, or how to become a Zen enlightened, and you just teach me, and then I'll get it, which is that commodification programming nowadays. You just get online and you can learn about crystals, you can learn about this and that, and suddenly you're teaching a class, like a lot of the Reiki stuff. you know, people, yoga stuff, people take so many hours of classes and then they teach it. So maybe they're qualified to teach a class, but as far as the broader way of life and a full spectrum way of life, that is another question that requires, you know, years and years of experience. So that to me is what that Zen story says. Then, you know, he has to be teached to, and the master replies, you had better wash your bowl. Like, do what's needed, do what's right in the moment. And that's the fuller spectrum, I think, that reflects that. And another way I was thinking of this, another Zen story, actually not a Zen story, but a Zen saying, which also there are many of those, which I realized sums up the kind of the true way that the elements, the earth, water, and the wind, and the fire actually are, and how we're all connected. And sometimes I meditate and pray with water and with earth. I touch the soil in a potted plant indoors at night. And it made me think, well, that soil is the same soil as all the earth. So it communicates. It can communicate the way if, just to follow this metaphor, say I'm a child of Mother Earth. And if I can touch that soil, I can communicate with the earth. So a child away from its parents, miles and miles and miles away, is on a cell phone communicating with its parent. So we accept that, no problem. But to say, oh, I can touch the potted soil and I'm talking with the earth now, people, I don't know. You know, some people just may think that's flat out crazy, or, you know, delusionary, or isn't that nice, or science, you may have scientific questions, but whatever. I'm not trying to prove anything. I'm just sharing my experience that doing that actually reminded me of the Zen saying, which is, when I pick up one speck of dust, all nations are united. When I pick up one speck of dust, all nations are united. Now, how preposterous is that? One little speck of dust, yet all nations are united. But that's the truth, that everything is connected, and via one thing, you can connect with everything. Or that we're already connected, but you know, by tuning in to one portion, you are in effect and in fact tuning into the whole spectrum at some level. To what degree is another story. But instead, we've had this interconnectivity of gadgets and cell phones and computers and all manner of you know, finance and everything that goes on, and that is readily accepted as no problem. But meanwhile, where is the questioning and the attention to the other? So again, I call it a case of commodification of cool. So it's cool to have the cell phone. It's cool to have the crystal. It's cool to do the yoga pose. But is it cool to talk with the earth, talk with the water? Is it cool to have a plain, simple pebble? I have little rocks around the apartment. They have significance and meaning to me. They're simple little plain old common rock, but is that cool? And where's the yoga posture, bending down to look at the little bugs as they scoot across the patio at night? Is there a yoga pose for that? Maybe there is. I know a lot of the yoga poses and Tai Chi and stretches, they actually come from imitating postures and poses of animals and other birds and other beings like that. So if we go back in time to the origins of some of these things, we do connect with that. So these are like my observations, my inconclusive experiences with people and noticing the society and especially younger generations. But I don't think it's just that, because, you know, a lot of the hippies sold out and put on ties and got jobs. So I don't think it's just the modern technology. I think it's a broader lifestyle, and it's a hard path in a way to commit to something deeper than the, you know, the kind of social butterflying So I think that's the deeper gist that I wanted to convey. You know, even in literarily, like the beats, I've been very influenced. My poetry has been influenced by the beat poetry. But there's a certain kind of surfaceness to the beat. The whole, you know, the On the Road, the Jack Kerouac, this sort of American road trip became glorified and, you know, footloose and fancy free. Yet where's the respect of the native peoples and the original caregivers of the land? So I think even, again, and that was one that was like the, you know, at first what was radical and off the charts. Then later, I noticed this a while ago, after like 20, 30, 40 years, now that gets taught in schools. I talked to a young woman at a coffee shop, and, you know, she was well-read on the beats. So that what was counterculture then becomes part of the culture. It becomes like eaten up and becomes commodified in a sense. It becomes part of the educational package. So again, on the one hand, that's a cool thing. They learn about that. People learn about that stuff. On the other hand, I think it's distracting from a deeper looking at what we're doing with the earth and the so-called environment and how we're living our lives in a deeper, fuller way. So yeah, that's my take on the commodification of cool, and that I would say that the word what's needed, what I'd like to see more and experience more is kindness. And to balance the cool, there's rekindling. So there's that sense of warming again and rekinding, being kind again, rekindling, not just coming across as a package deal and commodified and I'm cool and like not acting it, but genuinely being that. And I want to add to that one more quote. This is from an article by Pepe Escobar, and part of the quote in the bit here is by Byung-Chul Han, who I featured some shows ago reviewing his The Burnout Society book. So it starts off, gets into the quote: financialization of everything means total marketization of life itself. In his latest book, No Cosas Quiebras del Mundo de Hoy, in Spanish, no English translation yet, I loosely translated as not things or no things, the bankruptcy of today's world. The foremost German contemporary philosopher Byung-Chul Han, who happens to be Korean, analyzes how information capitalism, unlike industrial capitalism, converts also the immaterial into merchandise. And here's the quote: life itself acquires the form of merchandise. The difference between culture and commerce disappears. Institutions of culture are presented as profitable brands. I'll read that again because I find that highly interesting. Life itself acquires the form of merchandise. The difference between culture and commerce disappears. Institutions of culture are presented as profitable brands. End quote. The most toxic consequence is that, quote, total commercialization and mercantilization of culture had the effect of destroying the community. Community as merchandise is the end of community. End quote. Community as merchandise is the end of community. So there's the danger and the trap of commodifying any culture, any sort of way of lifestyle and being. As soon as it's commodified and made as part of capitalism and commercialization, that's it for that's where the community, the actual community, people actually caring about each other and being able to maintain interaction and conversations, that's what community is about. But when it's commodified, it's like, oh, that doesn't work. Well, it's on to the next thing. So that's a fascinating addition to the topic of looking not only at how information is being now, you know, capitalized, part of capitalism, in this information or the overload information age, but also how culture is and how certain cultures become trivialized and commodified. So that's something to heads up about. And the message I get from that is to encourage genuine a community and maintain genuine sense of community that looks past the surface reasons, the false sense of community that comes when it's a commodified thing rather than a genuine thing, a genuine experience. And here's a PS to the commodification of cool, an article at RT, Solid Reasons to Microchip Kids. An article in the World Economic Forum's website makes the case for implant technology. Hearing aids or glasses no longer carry a stigma. They are accessories and are even considered a fashion item. Likewise, implants will evolve into a commodity. This is the Vice President of Research and Development of the Inter-University Microelectronics Center, Kathleen Phillips. So there's a religion of technology and the commodification of cool smack dab trying to go into little kids, into their bodies, into their physical bodies, and commodify. So if you think this stuff is just social commentary, think again. This isn't just, oh, this is my little opinion and social commentary on the way people behave. No, this is serious stuff. This is part of the maniacal Klaus Schwab World Economic Forum that people have been talking about. And he's a puppet. Klaus Schwab is a puppet of the elite. He just spouts the line of the, quote, fourth industrial revolution, which will, quote, lead to a fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identity. Okay, now this is as far away from holistic body, mind, spirit, and emotions as it gets. Physical, digital, and biological identity. So, heads up, people. Thanks for listening, and be well.